Well, I'm going to try my best not to spike the ball on the one-yard line here. It's looking good so far. You're a great group. Well, once again, we're not going to get all the way home here, so I'm just going to share a couple stories with you and maybe give you the why you might want to consider the 11th step if you want to. My experience of it was that, as most things, came to me out of a selfish, self-centered episode. I got sober, and I was going to kind of a semi-bad noon meeting with a collection of people in it, and they called it the Jerry Springer group, so that would probably give you an idea of the whole thing. But I kept hearing this whole thing, find somebody who has what you want and, you know, hook up with them and everything. Being a spiritual guy, there was this guy there kept saying, you know, my name is Jim and I'm a devout 11th stepper. And I really liked the imported convertible that Jim drove. He had his own company and he had a private jet, so and a hot wife. And I wanted what Jim had. And so I decided, he kept saying he had this devout 11th stepper thing going. So I went home that night and got in this, you know, really bad recliner chair. And I'm sitting there and I don't know anything about meditation or steps or anything. So I grabbed the 12 and 12 because they've got numbers on them. And I sit there and I start reading that beautiful prayer in there. And And I seem to have been there for a while, and I don't know, just kind of felt better and got out of the chair and went to bed. And about 3 weeks later, I'm sitting in a meeting. Now, at this time, I'm smoking at a level that I piss off other smokers. You know, like she described with Mark, you know, I really smoke those things. I'm not just taking a puff and putting it in the ashtray. And I wake up in this meet. The guy across the table from me lit a cigarette. And I looked down, and there was a pack in my pocket, and I realized it was the same pack from 3 weeks ago. I hadn't tried to quit anything, but for some reason, for 3 weeks, I hadn't smoked. Had no withdrawal symptoms or anything else. And I go, wow. I was horrified, lit a cigarette, and it started puffing. But I had the intuition that there was some power available here. So, of course, I went home and I got in the same nasty robe and sat in the same chair and got the 12 and 12 out. And, you know, we're gonna take this trip again, see what we can do with it. And nothing happened. But I now had an experience. I could not deny that there was power available here. So over the years, I dabble in a little meditation every now and then. But I couldn't honestly say I'd been serious about it. And I was visiting some friends out in, they lived in Redondo Beach at the time. And some of you may know Jay Stennett and his wife Adele. And they have had a beautiful condo there, and top floor, look off the ocean and all this kind of good stuff. And they were really interesting. I noticed how peaceful this house was. And I couldn't figure out why until I realized there was no TV going on in every room. And Adele or Jade come up every now and then and say, hey, Mike, would you sit with me for a couple minutes? Well, I'm their guest. I mean, how am I going to say, now, yeah, I can't spare 3 minutes for you. So I started just doing it. And I spent about a week there then, and I was so peaceful over that time. And then I started going to weird meetings out there, like the Manhattan Beach Sunday Meditation Group. And back where I was in AA in Indianapolis at that time. Nobody's going to sit still for it. Don't talk about it, especially newcomers won't do any meditation and all this kind of stuff. Go to this Sunday meeting, and it's weird. It's a beautiful, guy's got a huge house overlooking the ocean again. He opens it up for a meditation meeting every Sunday. And you walk in the door, and there's just a little sign there that says, please leave your shoes and your mind by the door. And you walk in, and you can sit in a chair if you want to. There are yoga mats on the floor. There's all kinds of different stuff. And what happens is you go in there, and a chime rings. And an hour later, another chime rings. And everybody says amen and files out. And there are people of all ages here, newcomer people, of course it is California, but people with 30 days are participating here. And they know how to make you comfortable. You know, it's not like you can't scratch your nose if it itches or something like that, but all of this, and all of a sudden that became very attractive to me. So I went home and I canceled my cable subscription, not my internet, but I realized I was paying Comcast $168 a month to upset me. And you know, I'd even DVR stuff and go to a meeting and get peaceful and come back and listen to that and get upset from the stuff that I DVR'd. So I let that go, and some peace came into that. And eventually it ended up in my relationship with Jess. And I tell you what I'm going to tell you with her permission. As I told you, she'd been molested. And we started meditating together from just about Jump Street in our relationship. And so when it finally came time, I say finally, but when we were actually going to be completely intimate, we're there in bed, and things are going well, and she says, Mike, could we just be quiet and meditate for 10 minutes? The beauty of having some meditation practice is that my inside voice doesn't always reach the outside. So I said, of course, dear. But we meditated and then had a beautiful experience. And I didn't get it until later, and it just broke my heart wide open. Later we were having a cup of coffee, and she said, thank you so much for doing that meditation. I know that wasn't what you wanted to do right at that moment, but she says, that meditation made me feel like I'd had my innocence restored. And that was a game changer for us. And all the old stuff I told me about, oh, that's a bunch of goddamn hippie stuff, that's a bunch of, you know, all those stories fell apart. over time with persistence. And today it's a wonderful part of this. At one point, like everything I've done in my life, I got into competitive spirituality. You know, I was just, you know, I got the app, and I'm, you know, calling up, you know, how many hours did you get this week, you know? And it's, you know, it's kind of like playing golf by yourself and cheating, you know. It's nuts. But there's time after time when I've paid attention, there's real power here available to this. And sometimes the times that are hard for me is I'll feel at times completely blocked. And I believe Tarek mentioned Dark Night of the Soul. I mean, you know, hey, there's nobody at the other end of the line here. Dial tone. And but just like I've done with other things, I persisted. And sure enough, things change. Sometimes I have to, God seems to be kind of a jokester with this. He will not let me get this locked into a system, you know. He's kind of like my wife. She wants life to be interesting and varied and everything else. So I'll, times I'll just be following my breath. And at other times I'm working with some chimes or some music or from, you know, all kinds of things. But God seems to really love all the approaches to having a relationship with Him. It's like having your kids visit, you know. Sometimes you're, you know, going to have peanut butter and jelly for Thanksgiving, but it's a neat deal. And it's very practical. And I love especially that 3 minutes because I watched the impact in my business when I started sitting in my car meditating for 3 minutes before I went in to see that client. I'd respond differently. And the same thing before I walk into an AAA meeting. Who am I taking to this meeting here? I don't need to be garbage. The meeting isn't where I drag my garbage in and dump it. Book says we meet frequently so newcomers can see what we have to offer. The meeting isn't for me. It's my job to make a contribution. So that's my experience with that. And I want to talk about one other thing here to kind of wrap up my portion of this. If you've been around for a while and, you know, life's been very good to you and all this kind of stuff and grateful, you may think there may not be any more miracles to come. But if you remember, I read that piece of sex inventory to you about Ellen. And I was sitting in my oncologist's office waiting for my cancer checkup. And let's see, okay. And this was February of 2018. And my phone dinged and I got an email. And here was the email. Says, "Hello, Mike. Your brother, Robert Lorenz, gave me your email address and said that you might be able to assist me. I'm fairly new to Ancestry.com and new to the search for my biological family. Ancestry matched Robert and I as having a close family DNA relationship. They said he was her uncle or grandfather. So far, this is the only close DNA match for me. I'm a 47-year-old woman. My parents adopted me from Catholic Charities out of Sacramento, California. I was born in February of 1971. I have a family tree started, but it's all from my wonderful adoptive family. I'm curious to learn more about my biological family tree, and I'd appreciate any information you might have to give me. I would also like to say that I've had a good life and a loving adoptive family. I'm happily married and have one amazing 13-year-old daughter. I'm grateful to my biological parents for making what I'm sure was not an easy choice and ensuring that I've had a good life. I'm curious about my biological roots and any relevant medical history. I'd like to be able to provide that information to my daughter for her benefit. I want to be sensitive to the fact that the story of my birth might not be known or shared, and I do not want to cause my biological parents and their families any distress. Thank you for your assistance. Best regard, Joey, and then her last name. Well, that was kind of a game show. Whoa. So I got in touch with Joey, and we chatted, and she emailed me some pictures, and Ellen was a redhead, and this was a redheaded little girl, and looked a lot like her mom. And we talked and talked and talked, and eventually, of course, the conversation leads to, well, who's my mom? And I paused and prayed, and I said, here's the thing. I promised your mother the last time I saw her to leave her and her family alone and not disturb them. And I'm thinking this might be an exception, but I can't just make that public to you without her permission. So I went ahead and we agreed that I would send Ellen a letter. I had internet tracking, and I knew from her parents' obituary to where she's living in a resort town in Idaho, and so I knew how to locate her. So here's the letter I sent to Ellen. It says, Dear Ellen, please forgive my intrusion after all these years. Last week I received the following email, what I just read to you. Since receiving this email, I've been in contact with Joey via email, text, and an extended phone conversation. The details she's given me, including photos and her DNA match with my brother Bob as her uncle, have convinced me that she's almost certainly the child you placed for adoption. She's an amazing woman who is especially grateful that you provided her with a chance to grow and thrive with her adoptive family. Connecting with her is a blessing, a piece of grace I never expected to receive. No kids, some stepkids, but no kids. In our conversation, I made it clear to Joey that it was your courage and your principles that made her life possible. I told her that I treated you horribly without equivocation. My treatment of you is the most shameful thing that I've done in my life, and whatever you may choose to say to her won't be too harsh. Joey knows only that your name is Ellen. Should you choose, here are the ways you can contact her. Joey understands and will respect your decision if you decide not to connect, but asks that you let one of us know so she won't continue searching. if this has awakened awkward memories and feelings about the harm I did to you and your family that you'd like to discuss, you can reach me in the following ways. I'm not on Facebook. I pray that you're enjoying a wonderful life, sincerely. And I FedExed the letter. And a few days later, I was driving from Indianapolis down to Louisville to spend the weekend with Jess. We were not quite married yet. And my phone lit up, and it was Alan. And we had quite a conversation. And I got to hear about things from her standpoint, and how heartbreaking it was, because she said, I made a mistake. They tried to talk me out of it, but I wanted to have the baby with me for 24 hours before they took it. And she says, when they came and took the baby, it was the worst thing that ever happened to me. And she'd named her Bridget at the time. I like Joey better. but, yes, just me always trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery and everything. But we had a conversation, and amends were made, and she said, I'm guessing you're an AA, because I kind of hear some of that AA lingo when you're talking to me. And she says, my son is 9 years sober in AA. And I sometimes go to open meetings with him, and so that's where I picked up the lingo. And then she says, here's what you don't know. All three of my brothers have died of alcoholism, and all that, and we closed our business up, and she's having a great life out there in ski country. And Joey and I have, it's been a magical relationship, because we're just a fit for each other. And when I got that call in the doctor's office, you want to talk about synchronicity, she lived just outside of Sacramento and at that time. And that Friday I was flying to Sacramento to do a retreat up toward the mountains, toward Tahoe up there. And so I was about 10 miles from where she lived, and we hadn't really talked, so I didn't know it then. But we visit, and she and Jess get along perfectly together and everything else. And Joey says, you know, she had questions, you know, and some... the heartbreaker was, she says, I'm afraid to ask, but I need to know, was I a product of rape? And I was so happy that I could just, without pausing and thinking about it, I just think, no. But she said, after, as we were going back to the airport after my first visit out there, she said, you know, about the only thing I'm sorry about here is that it took us 47 years to connect. And I just intuitively looked at her and said, honey, it took God about 47 years to make me worth connecting with. And I'm so, all the times that I'd felt cheated because I had no kids and all that kind of stuff, I looked at, thank God I did not drag her through the pain. She would have been 14 when I got sober and would have gone through all kinds of stuff. Thank God. And it goes back to what Don used to tell me. Anything at all God's got in mind for me is better than anything at all I'll ever have in mind for myself. And if you're, I'm a week after next, I'm going out to their, they've moved over to the Lincoln, they're a little closer to Tahoe up in the mountains there, and I'm going out for my favorite son-in-law's, Chris's birthday. And by the way, I'm not dad, I'm pops. She's got really good parents that did a lot for her, and so I don't need to muscle in there. And Pops is just fine. And my granddaughter is some semi-genius, has got a scholarship that's at, just started college at San Luis Obispo. And that's amazing. So I don't know what to tell you other than it's a life of miracles. And it's the other side, I guess the other end of it is I'm a stage 4 cancer patient. So we don't know what time is going to be here. But see, that was the promise Don made me when I started working with him. He did not say, if you do this, you'll stay sober for the rest of your life or anything. He said, no, if you choose to walk this path with me, I will show you how to live in the presence of death, including your own, without fear. Now, it's not like I never have any anxiety. But the fact that I am maybe just a little more aware of the fragility of life than I might be otherwise doesn't mean I can't be present for life and enjoying it. I'm not so busy dying or planning the end that I can't enjoy the here and now. And so it's a gift all over. I can't imagine, begin to tell you what a wonderful thing all this has been. So thank you for letting me be here with you and giving me your energy this weekend. And I'll hand it to Mrs. Parker.
Oh my gosh, I know that story, and it hits me every time like it's the first time I've ever heard it. That is just remarkable. I love Mike Lorenz with all my heart. I love Jess. They are great people. And you know, one of the coolest things about what's going on here is it's real. You know, there's no big secrets, no walk through that door, and my life's been great ever since. And you know, I mean, if somebody wants to live in that world, they're certainly welcome to. That's the beauty of Alcoholics Anonymous. You can live in any part of AA you want to live in. But you really can. You can live in that, and maybe it is true for them. It's just not been my experience. I'm going to try to get through this, and I'll warn you, this gets pretty emotional for me, so I'm going to start blubbering here. You know when it says that we constructively review our day. Mike would come to visit for a conference or whatever the case would be. He does a lot of silent meditation. I don't. I do breath work and then go into, I guess it would be called contemplative two-way prayer conversation with God. A lot of pen, a lot of writing, a lot of listening for God and that. Everybody's got their own shoe for their foot. Don't feel like if you can't, because let me tell you, I gave it my best college shot to sit still. Lorenz comes to visit, and I've had people say, well, if you did it, you'd really see, and I'm like, try that on, okay? I've tried it. I'm 37 years sober, okay? I am an athlete. I know when I can do something and when I can't. And that one is just not, it doesn't float my boat. And so Lorenz comes to the house and he says, and Charlie was out of town, which always, I love Charlie, but it was kind of fun. I had Mike all of myself. And we go shopping. Remember, we went, we went shopping for a dress for me. And so he says, you want to do some meditation? Now, it was like I swallowed a golf ball. And I said, well, sure. So we sit on the couch. And I go, he goes, how long? Well, I'm not going to answer that question. And he goes, 45 minutes? Oh, my God. Got to be kidding me. And I go, sure. And we sit there for 45 minutes. Now, I will tell you, it was remarkable. It was after, 15 when this thing finally shut up. And then, as if that's not enough, that evening, he goes, you want to meditate again? Well, the only answer is yes. You can't go, yeah, no, today was plenty. And I said, yeah, we did another 45 minutes. I have not meditated in that atmosphere ever that long. When we were with Mark, the longest we'd ever done was 3 minutes, which is a big deal. What I do like to do for myself is to sit. Let me start with constructively review our day, and then I'll get into what it is. I'm going to talk a lot about affirmative prayer, and I only have a certain period of time, so I'm going to get through this fast. I want to read, I believe strongly in affirmative prayer. Call it positive prayer, call it whatever you want. It's in all the religious bodies. It's Hinduism, Buddhism, Judaism, Christianity, the whole deal. Sow within as without, we reap what we sow, self-fulfilling prophecy, water seeks its own level, as a man thinketh, it's in everything. So what goes on up here is a demonstration, right? You're going to demonstrate what's going on up here. So if you're scared to death that you got a job that you don't think you're qualified for, you're going to screw up a lot because you doubt yourself, right? So we actually bring to ourselves what we are so afraid of, right? The fear, like the little Lorenz quotes. And so when I give the idea of how to do affirmative prayer, people have emailed me because they did it. And I'm talking hundreds of emails. And this was when Mark told me to go do the affirmative prayer over my business situation. So this is one, I'm going to start with one, I'll end with one. It says, Katie, I can't begin to tell you what an impact your experience, strength, and hope has had on me. We talked about the power of positive affirmative prayer. I shared with you my situation about my youngest son, that he has been estranged from the family. Just swallow that. Your children are estranged from you. That's a big effing deal, guys. That's an empty hole in your heart. Now, the kids can do it without an empty hole. They're pissed. But we are devastated. I took your suggestion and prayed each and every night and every morning. This past year, New Year's Eve, I had my entire family, my two sons, my two daughter-in-laws, three grandchildren, my husband, at my dinner table for a family dinner. This was my exact prayer, along with the positive affirmations. I visualized this scene in my head for more than a year. The event that led up to this were all placed and centered in love with God. I used the counsel of others and let God take over. We are now a family again, and my husband, granddaughters, and myself are going to Tucson in April for a visit. We are all invited. Yes, there is still work to do, but the door has been opened. This took a year. Okay, that's really important to know because the other ones are very interesting. The 11th step suggests prayer and meditation, right? We shouldn't be shy on the matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. We already talked about other spiritual pieces of literature that speak to you. It says it works if you have the proper attitude and work at it, right? The book's always talking about this proper attitude. You got to dig deep down inside of yourself. You got to swallow and digest. If you don't see that you're the problem, that's the problem. You know what I mean? We just want to blame the whole world, and we don't ever want to take responsibility. You've got to do that. You've got to take responsibility. If you want to get well, suck it up, buttercup, It just is what it is, and we want to have arrived. So this attitude's on page 55. It says we can only clear the ground a bit. If our testimony helps sweep away prejudice, right? The judgment, the prejudice. Don't judge yourself. That's the worst harm you can do, is to constantly judge yourself. Enable you to think honestly, so that would assume we can't think honestly, if it's trying to get you to think honestly. And then courage, encourage you to search diligently within yourself. See, I look at 10 and 11 as hand in glove, right? So you got to, my buddy Blind Dave does this three-tier fountain, and the top tier is small. That's the evening review. The next tier is a little bit bigger. That's on awakening, where you're taking your corrective measures from the day before into that. And then you want to do any other practice you want to do, have at it. But you better take the day before into it. And then the next one, the big one, is the drama of life, which is your 10th step, where you're watching, turning, watching, turning. If you want to shut your whole system down, stick your finger in the top of that fountain, and the very first thing is the evening review. I think the evening review is the most important thing to keep your finger on the pulse of who you are and what you're doing. See, the more you shove down that argument you have, you know, Lorenz had to find the guy at the gas pump. The more you shove those down, the more blocked you get, and then you can't figure out what's wrong, because each block is about that big. It's not this big. It's not the big fear. It's 100 little grains of sand that block you off, and then you can't hear the sunlight of the Spirit, you know, however you want to call you, the God of your understanding. And then it starts with, we retire at night. We constructively review our day. Constructively means in a way that is intended to have a useful and beneficial purpose, not judgment. This is not about judging yourself. Oh, the minute your voices in your head, your ego starts to judge you, you're in trouble. I'm like, oh, no. I am that in a bag of chips, man. I like who I am, and I like to go through life that way. Now, does that mean I'm like that all the time? Of course not. I've got my friends that I do 10 steps with, because I cannot let that ego get a hold of me. Then we have all the questions that we answer in the 10th step. I mean, in the evening review. Now, let me be very clear. I don't answer all these questions. I mix it up. I take these disciplines just like I do at the gym, right? Just like I did in my fitness business. You don't go to the gym and do the same thing over and over and over again. You've got to mix it up. So I take these things and I mix them up, because they get stale, from my experience, at about 6 weeks. 6 weeks, it's stale, it's flat, I see it. I mean, and don't get me wrong. These two guys on the front row had food yesterday. Oh, I felt like I died and gone to heaven. It's like, oh my God, is that chicken? Is that rice? That's peanut butter, isn't it? Okay, I'm in. And we're talking this world, because that's my world. But that doesn't mean I love exercising. I pull up to the gym and I don't want to get out. I don't want to do it. I want the benefits from it, but I don't want to do it. Prayer and meditation is the same way. See, I don't want to do it. I don't have time, so I don't want to do it. Well, you better figure out where that time needs to be, then stop in the middle of your day. Now, the evening review Lorenz and I talked about this one time, in the way the book, have you seen what the manuscript, the original manuscript where they wrote in the big book of the manuscript, they actually had On Awakening, they had the evening review in On Awakening. So that's how I do it. So I do it in the morning. I don't do it in the evening. You know why? I can't. I cannot get that discipline. And I know, as an athlete, if I can't get that discipline, I'm not going to keep beating my head against the wall. I tried to take up swimming one time. Oh, my God. First of all, the suits are so ugly. And then you got to put that rubber cap on your head. You got to figure out how to get all your hair in there. And then the earbuds to hear the music really don't work underwater like they say they do. And you got your little flippers, and you look stupid. And I tried it for a month, and it didn't work. So I abandoned it. I got to figure out something else that'll work. So these questions are very important. You can weave them in any way you want to. But I always put, where am I resentful and where am I afraid? That is always going to be in my love letter to God in my morning time. So when I roll out of bed, I strongly encourage you to do nothing. You cannot do, you can go get a cup of coffee, got no problem with that. But if you pick up your phone and you look at your phone, you just lost about, I think, 75% of your connection with God. There's something about On Awakening that's magical, right? And so, and also there's a little trick with the phone problem, because you've got your phone, and I like to look at who all I called yesterday so that I can really do a thorough evening review, because, you know, there's pros and cons in your evening review, right? Where was it good? Where did the sponsee bother me? What sponsee do I need to pray for? Yada, yada, yada. But looking at that phone's dangerous. You know, you might do a screensaver of it, you know, and just know that when you flip your phone over, that screensaver is going to come up and you're going to see who it was. The minute you get in there, it's trouble, trust me. And so we're getting all this evening review questions, and I don't think it's a good idea to answer, you know, were we resentful? Yes, I'm not interested in that. I've got to go deeper into it. And I scribble out a ton of inventory in the evening review that Marty never sees, because I write enough inventory to see where I'm a hypocrite. I write enough inventory where I can see that I could be either person in that play. And one of the things about Charlie, and this is lighthearted, but it's true, is he makes my evening review about every night, because Charlie doesn't have a problem. I do. You see, I want him to do what I want him to do, and he doesn't. Does that sound familiar? Oh my gosh. And here's the thing. I want Charlie to sit and have an intimate conversation with me for about 6 minutes. I know he's not the guy for 20, but six. I just give my right arm for that. And he's just not that guy. You know? And the story stealing and all of that stuff, that's who Charlie is. And I want Charlie to change, and I will never be satisfied. Ever, never, 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 never. So I want to love my husband for who he is. And if I don't do that, I don't like the way he's drinking his coffee. I start to hear that sip. Oh, wow, wow. And he's clearing his throat, you know, and I'm, you know, and before you know it, I don't like what I'm hearing, what I'm seeing, what I'm doing. That's what I have to do. Some people don't. Some people have it made in the shade. That ain't me. So then there's the warning, but we must be careful not to drift. This is in the evening review. Be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, and morbid reflection. Why? Because that makes me feel bad? No, because it doesn't make me useful to you. See, none of this is about me feeling bad. And let me tell you, it's easy to judge yourself. Worry, remorse, morbid self-reflection. Easy, easy, easy to slip into that. And we don't want to do that. This is the greatest gift that God has given us is 10 and 11, and of course, working with others. And it says, you know, after making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. That means able to correct. So if I owe an amends, which typically that's not the case. I'm like Lorenz. I'm quick at making the amends. If I stepped on your toes, we're going to be doing that quickly. I don't have to wait on that one. But I do want to see where I'm curt with somebody, where I not returning a call because I don't really want to talk to you. I mean, or pinning Charlie to the wall with something, right? And we had a pretty good dust up a couple of weeks ago, and we haven't had one of those in a long, long time. And the next day, we both kind of felt like, you know, this was wow, we're closer to the edge than we thought we were. You know what I mean? Because we are passionate. Okay. And that's the way that goes. And so we're taking these corrective measures that you will hear from God as to what to do into On Awakening. So then it says On Awakening. Now see that you're taking this information, and I think written is always important. Magical stuff happens with pen to paper. On Awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. Stop right there. Then I pull out my to-do list. Right? I'm thinking about what I got to do today, and I'm writing down all my stuff I got to do. Now, I'm not going to complete that list. This is what I'd like to do. There was a time in my sobriety where I took that list and I completed every goddamn thing. I was running red lights. I'm get out of my way, getting the line, looking in the, come on, people, I got 9 more places I got to be, and oh, I can complete it. And at the end of the day, it was like, ha, got it done. That's not what this is about. This is about when I face indecision in prayer and meditation. Is this even something that needs to be on my list? And then when I'm out in the world, I pause. When agitated or doubtful, I'm doubtful. I really want to go have lunch with my grandson. but I need to do three other errands. God, please give me the direction, and I will quietly hear the direction. 2 second pause. It's a gift. It's an absolute gift. And if you don't hear it for a long time, don't stop doing it, right? The discipline of who we are and what we are is the benefit. You will hear it. It says, before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking and especially ask to be divorced. Now think about that. How many people in here have been divorced? Okay? Yeah, me too. First husband, 8 years. Ooh, pain in the ass. So you know how painful a divorce is. Deeply painful. So if we are being divorced from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives, think about that. Doesn't say fear. It says self-pity is the first thing. Because that's where we go. Just when the alarm goes off, you're like, oh. This morning the alarm went off and I looked at it and was like, oh. You know, I'm grateful I'm here. I can't wait. But what to get out of the room is a lot. And Charlie's like, honey, you want a coffee? Yes. I'm going to get in the shower. Got to get ready. Got to pack. You know what I mean? I mean, that's just what we do. I mean, some people say, man, I wake up in a great mood. Okay, well, that's not my experience. dishonest, right? Lying, sin by omission, and not to, you know, believe in the delusional lie, and then self-seeking. Where am I going to do this? This is where we have to look at. We have to spend some time in these questions. Now, on awakening, I do take all of that, and I do all of what it's saying. It says, under these conditions, which is a state of mind, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance. For after all, God gave us brains to use. Have you ever heard somebody in an AA meeting go, yeah, well, God, it says God gave us brains to use under these conditions. Dude, I can tell by what you're sharing. You ain't touched this stuff, right? So you don't get to use that brain if you're not touching this stuff because all you're doing is dumping everything in your meeting because that's what we thought AA was about. You bring your trash to the meeting, you get pat on the back, don't worry, it'll get better, keep coming back, and I did it all day long, right? How do you know what you don't know? I don't want to judge those people, so I've got to work hard on that if I'm going to be sitting in that meeting. It says, our thought life, once again, God-conscious thought life, our thought life will be placed on a higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. Now remember, it can also be good motives. Because that's what the third step warned us about. Or good intentions. How about that one? In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. This is where we do it in prayer and meditation. Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought or decision. Do you see that there's no action taken? We relax and take it easy. The right answer will come if our own house is in order. And that still quiet voice is still quiet. You can remember, I pushed it away when God told me to go make the amends to my stepmom. Nah, pushed it away, didn't even realize I was doing that until the second day. And then I really stopped and went, wow. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of our mind. It absolutely will. Once again, Mark said, use it like fitness. So we can talk about diet all day long. We can talk about exercise all day long. But till you get your butt on that treadmill, we got nothing. Charlie uses being a diabetic and sitting in the diabetes support group meetings and talking about diabetes and yada, 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 but you never take your insulin. See, that's what we tend to do. We like to talk about it, but we don't take the action. And once again, you got to bring it down to the moment. So all you have is today. So you watch your thinking, right? I always tell people, in watching your thinking, that in itself is a tough practice. But if I said, go out there and see how many white cars there are, you're going to be shocked. 80% of the vehicles are white. And you're like, my God, I never knew that, because you weren't conscious of it. You weren't given the assignment to go look at that. So your assignment, all you have to do, you don't have to think about your evening review, you just have to watch your thinking. Just watch it. That's it. Don't judge it, just watch it. And then in the evening, do your evening review. You don't have to worry about on awakening yet. You're not there yet. See, what we want to do is we want to think about 4 years in advance, and I want to be meditating for 45 minutes, and I want to be able to do this, and you've already screwed the whole deal up. So the right answer will come if your own house is in order. What used to be a hunch or occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. What a promise. Is that your experience? But then I love this. This was the name of a halfway house. A guy told me, being still inexperienced was the name of the halfway house. And having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we're going to be inspired at all times. Let me tell you, being inexperienced is falls on me when I have not done my disciplines. Charlie and I went to a shoot that we were gone 12 days in the motorhome. Let me tell you, it was not conducive to do my disciplines. That didn't mean I still wasn't having some prayer with God, but it was not. And with our current situation, that is a dead end. Right? And I mean, before I know it, I think that's kind of what caused that dust up at the four-way stop. You know, is I had certainly not done my stuff. And if Charlie says something because I said something with a tone and he rebuttals, I mean, normally I can back down from that. Well, I did not back down, not at all. And when I go back, when I'm having my conversation with God, it's like, so I really believed I could go almost 14 days without doing my disciplines. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm still praying, still talking to God, doing all that. But I'm not doing my disciplines. And it was a pretty ugly fight. And I will tell you, Charlie was in the wrong. But no, I had a big piece in that baby. Don't think I didn't. Yeah, I just could not keep my mouth shut on that one. And then it says, So you have to understand what that's talking about. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd thoughts and actions and ideas. You bet. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, which means that's a lot of stepping in the mud hole, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon this. And then as you go throughout the day, you do what Charlie uses the acronyms, which, by the way, I am not in the world of acronyms. If one more person sends me a flippin' acronym that I know, laugh out loud and laughing my ass off. That's it. That's as far as I'm going. I'm not going with all the, I have to call Charlie. I got three acronyms in a text. What does that mean? And he's Mr. On It. So I'm going to speak in full words, okay? I think there's something spiritual about full words. But he likes to say this is called PARS. Pause, ask, remind, and say. And it says, as we go through the day, so now we're out in the world, we pause when agitated or doubtful. Remember, I'm much more doubtful than I am agitated. I don't go through the world angry like I used to. You know, the injustice in the world and everything. I've done a ton of work on that. And remember, I'm 64, I'm retired, and I don't have kids in the house. That takes a whole lot of pressure off you. And ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves we're no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, thy will be done. So we pause when agitated or doubtful, ask for the right thought or action. Now we're in an action mode, right? And a thought, reminding ourselves, saying to ourselves, this is not about me, God. Who do you want me to see? Do you believe that God is orchestrating every moment? You hear burning bush after burning bush, and then people say, oh, I'm not looking for a burning bush. Look for it. It's there. It's incredible. Mark Houston, Charlie and Katie, and it had it not been for Charlie, you wouldn't have me here. I can promise you I was out the door of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I ain't coming back. Some people say, well, you don't know that for sure. Once again, yes, I do. Yes, I do. Do you not think I know me? Oh, my God. I mean, I'm the gloves are off. Yeah, they should call me Scrappy. I'm like, yeah, I'm not coming in here. My pride wouldn't let me. My pride's going to kill me. So it says, we are then in much less danger. What's that? Hammerhead. Yes, sir. Yes, sir, that's correct. We are then in much less danger of, listen to these things, excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more effective. We do not tire so easily, for we're not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It works. It really does, right? And here's the deal. We're quitting playing God. What would it look like if I took the high road and took my hands off of everything? We alcoholics are undisciplined, so we let God discipline as a simple way that he has just outlined. Now, I want you to consider this. 10 and 11 go together as a hand in glove. The idea of watching for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear is much different than waiting for these things to show up. We're not going to use the 10 step as damage control. We're going to watch and turn. So in the turn is where the affirmative prayer comes in for me. So all of a sudden, say over the weekend, something's bothered you. Is that a far stretch? Okay, so something's bothered you. Well, this is a pretty intimate group. Hands down, God's once again orchestrated this crowd to come together. So whoever's bothering you, that's been orchestrated. So now you take that into a 3 to 10 second redirect of affirmative prayer. So all of a sudden, let's just assume the person you were sitting next to was fidgety and they just couldn't sit still and they were bugging the crap out of you, whatever. And so all of a sudden, I'll say something like, and you guys may know each other, you know, so we'll call him Bill. And I'll say, Bill and I have such an amazing relationship. We have so much peace and calm between us. I really enjoy his company, right? 3 to 10 second redirect. Some days, depending upon how painful something is, that's a simple one. Charlie's illness, whew, I'm redirecting a lot about his health. His health is amazing. He's lost a ton of weight. And I mean, I'm going on and on and on. This has not happened at all, guys. We're not even close to that happening. But I am affirming it as if it happened because I believe it 110% in my heart that if I put that out there, that will happen. And I got to tell you, when he said that he made that commitment to you guys that he's going to do something about it, that's the first time I'd ever heard it. Because that's how this stuff works. And let me tell you, when my husband says it out loud like that, he doesn't do that unless he means it. And, you know, sometimes I go behind his back and I tell his sponsees they need to talk to him about it. But I did not do that. And he's going to do what he says he's going to do. Because that's Charlie. See, I'm not the one that's going to make Charlie lose weight. I'm not the one that's going to get any of that done. My work, when people say there's nothing I can do, oh, there's a lot you can do. This affirmative prayer is the greatest gift, I think, in the whole wide world. It says, So the 10th step, watch for, and then when they crop up, there's the four things you're supposed to do, then check my work at the end of the day, corrective measures into on awakening, think about your 24 hours a day, consider your plans, yada, 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 here we go. So now here's the deal, guys. Don't judge yourself on affirmative prayer. It gets better. It really does. You're just writing the script of an amazing experience, right? So my son, I wish my son wasn't smoking. I wish he didn't drink diet sodas. I wish he took better care of his body. And I've got a big thing about teeth. And I wish his teeth looked better, right? He's 33 years old. He's married and got a beautiful wife. And so I'm doing all the prayer. Now, my son-in-law is chemist, scientist, whatever. Big old brain. Love him. But he is not about God at all. He's a scientist. So he's all about, I don't know, hell, it's the Big Bang or whatever that is. So I'm doing all this prayer after Mark's taught me this, and we're all sitting at the dinner table, and the whole family, which was really unique. That doesn't happen often. And Devin goes, you know, I've been doing prayer and meditation in the morning. And I'm like, I look at Charlie, and Charlie goes, yeah, been reading Emmett Fox. And I'm like, my God. And then Sam goes, you know what? I put these white strips on my teeth. And I'm like going, holy shit, I got a direct line right now. Who needs what? Oh, my God. And even Charlie said the same thing. He goes, unbelievable. I'm like, oh, my God, Charlie, what do you need? What do you need? I'm on it, you know. Oh, my God. But that was several years ago, and amazing things have happened. Amazing things have happened with this. But I started doing affirmative prayer in my morning time. I write love letters to God that are affirmative prayer. I'm a huge fan in my morning time to write love letters to God because I do like the two-way prayer that the Oxford group did. The Oxford group, that's how Henrietta Seiberling got the message from God that he was going to send somebody to talk to Dr. Bob, which is pretty flipping awesome. You know, we hung in the balance many times in AA. And so I took the two-way prayer, and I like to put a little flavor on everything. So I put it my way, the way I like to do it. Bill does it online in an interesting way, Father Bill. And so You can do two-way prayer any way you want, but I write a love letter to God in the morning. I call God, Father God, and I write this really heartfelt. It's not journaling. Journaling can get dark, right? Yeah, hear what I said. It can get dark, and it can be dangerous. And so I write this love letter to God for help. And then at the end of my time, he writes me back, and he says, my child. And I just start writing, and it's remarkable. It's audibly a different voice. It is verbiage I would never use, and it always works out that way. It's incredible. So I am going to end with these two affirmative prayers, and I'm hoping I can get through it. Charlie, you might need to get me something better than that. Well, hit it. Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, it's going to sound stupid. But remember, Mark Houston, when he told me it, I thought it was absurd. But you don't have to believe it. You just have to do it. Because if we're getting this negative out of our head, which it is so negative up there, remember all the white cars? You're going to be blown away. So this is the first one. And like I said, I get hundreds of these, and these people have given me permission to read them. I heard your description of positive prayer and wanted to start trying it. It started about 2 weeks ago. So this miracle happens in 2 weeks. The other woman, thank you, honey. The other woman's happened in a year. Oh, look at that, honey. You've got somebody showing you up over here. Tissue. Thank you. Oh, yeah. The nose runs the eye water, and I get napkins. I was at a point and started doing that in the morning and during my prayer and meditation time. Now remember, this happens in 2 weeks. Let me back up. To say my husband's ex-wife and I had a strained relationship would be the understatement of the year. She hated me. They lived in a very small town in Texas and had every right to. At 90 days sober, my husband and I got together when they were still married. Did you follow that? I bet she hated you. You're lucky she didn't kill you. Crimes of passion, baby. My husband couldn't stay sober, so there were long, drawn-out custody fights, screaming arguments, restraining orders. There isn't enough time in the day to describe the hell we have gone through. She remarried a year after we did, and it's been about 5 years now since this all started. We are all in AA, and they have refused to be a part of anything we're a part of. This is a very small town they're a part of AA in. It's not a big city. They wouldn't be at the same meetings. They wouldn't contribute to anything we were involved in, yada, yada, yada. I started positive prayer 2 weeks ago, praying that we had a healthy relationship. We were able to talk about the girls. There was two girls involved. I could share experience with the girls, her, and we all worked together as a unit to raise the girls. Last Sunday, my husband got a call from his ex-wife asking us to come visit after about the girls and their house. We went there. Her husband apologized for drawing a line in the sand with us, looking at us as evil and realizing the harm it was doing to everyone, especially the girls. They wanted us to all get together for everyone's sake, especially the girls. We planned on getting together once a month for dinner or bowling or some sort of activity so the girls could see that we are all in this together. She and I exchanged emails last week. She even called me on Sunday and asked if I would help her put together a little celebration for two women in AA. It absolutely brings me to tears every time I think about it. This has been a huge, huge struggle in my life for the past 5 years, and God wiped it out in 2 weeks. The power of God is just absolutely mind-blowing. I can't thank you enough. I just need to share this miracle with you. Please keep doing what you're doing. You're touching countless lives of little girls who don't even know who you are. Thank you. Wow. I mean, you can't deny that stuff, you know? So when it doesn't feel like it's going to work, just trust it. This one is really a doozy, and then I'll be done. My experience with positive prayer. In my early recovery, I had occasion to attend a day in the steps. At that session, I had the opportunity to speak with Katie, and please don't think I'm boasting about myself. This is just, you know, I happen to be the messenger. I'm the vessel to help you get connected to the power. I ain't the power. You know, if you do it, great. If you don't, oh boy. at that session, I had the opportunity to speak with Katie about my relationship with my estranged son, Tom. I explained that in my addiction, how I had abandoned my three children from 1994 to 2010. Then, December 4th of 2010, it happened. Pieces of my life started to come back together. On the relationship level, I reconnected and did amends with my son Nick and my daughter Avery. Yet there was one dark and ominous cloud in the sky of my world, and that was that I had not reconciled with my son Tom. His brother, sister, and mother had, unannounced to me, approached him to encourage him to consider reconciliation. And his response over and over and over again is, "The next time I see that bastard, I'll be pissing on his grave." Lovely. That's what we do. I shared this with Katie, who suggested I use the process called positive prayer and be delighted in the use of this powerful spiritual tool on a daily basis. She explained and gave me examples of how this had helped others and herself, and I left that decision, the decision commitment to the process. From that day forward, I did a 5-minute positive prayer every day, 7 days a week. That prayer started with a brief moment of silence to focus. Then I visualized my son and I on the first tee of the Pleasant Valley Golf Course in St. Thomas, Ontario. In my visualization, we would then play the first 3 holes each day. The sun was always shining and our interactive experience positive. That usually took about 3 minutes. And for the remaining 2 minutes, I asked a power greater than me to send positive energy out to my son, Tom, to look over him and to help keep him safe. Some days were better than others, but I was not obsessed with the issue of reconciling with my son. It's another gift that comes. Then in February 2013, my phone pings indicating I had a message to read. When I checked the message, it was a Facebook friend request, and it was from my son, Tom. I was spiritually and physically numb at the time. This miracle and the shock of receiving this was with me for several days. The relationship moved slowly and with an occasional message. The positive prayer continued. My daughter got married in August of 2014, and I was involved in building a deck. The gift of being able to be a part of this process was certainly not lost on me. However, there was a glitch. Son Tom refused to travel to the wedding because I was going to be there. I offered to my daughter that I would step aside. The day before the wedding, I was at my daughter's home reinstalling a bedroom door and was on my knees in the hall adjusting the lower hinge. I had a sense of somebody entering the hall from the kitchen, but I didn't look up. I then heard the voice that said, "Hey, old man, you sure you know what the hell you're doing there?" I did not recognize the voice, and I glanced up. And at that moment, my body went numb. There before me stood my son, Tom. I would like to say that I maintained my composure and gracefully got to my feet, greeted my son with some crazy fatherly greeting. However, the reality was I was completely lost in a broken down crying. I hugged him tighter than I can ever remember hugging anyone. I wish I could get through this without being so hysterical. Life blubbering how happy I was to see him and how sorry I was for everything in the past. The next couple of hours, we worked together preparing yard signs and carpentry, such touch-ups for the next day of the wedding activities. At one point, I turned to him and said, "Can we talk?" To which he replied, "Yes." We found a bench in the yard. It was there with 20 to 30 friends and family members working around us that I was able to do my amends to my son, Tom. Regardless of all the people and activity around us, it was just him and I. In that moment, I did my amends and ended it with the statement, "If I have harmed you in any other way, please tell me and let me know how I can balance these scales, how I can set things right." To this, he responded, "Why don't we just take it from here and see how it goes?" He again hugged me, and I told my son I loved him. If this story had ended there, it would be an incredible miracle, way beyond my pay grade. Over the past 5 years, Tom and I have deepened our relationship. This past July, my wife Ellen and I traveled to see Tom. We spent a week with Tom and his fiancee Jennifer. What a gift. All of that because of positive prayer, and I definitely inspired spiritual definitely inspired our spiritual program of recovery. I truly believe that that is true. So simple yet so complex, but it works, and I have the experience to do it. I have seen it happen in others as well. And oh yes, the visualization of the first tee hole of Pleasant Valley Golf Course, well, Tom and I went golfing for the first time ever at the Dawson City Golf Course, and he kicked my ass. And while I never remember him beating me, In my positive prayer, it was an absolute concrete manifestation of the miracle and the gift of grace that I could not have been more awake to in any moment in my life. Thank you, Katie, for those few moments 7 years ago. And that's the end.
Great job.
I wish I could get through that.